Just let your body relax. Get into a comfortable position. Take some deep breaths. Let your body and mind relax. And give the mind a few minutes just to wander around and settle in. Spend a moment or two just thanking your body and mind and sense organs for all that they do for you. Just appreciating having a body and having a mind, having sense organs, having a life. When you thank your body, you can feel the happiness of its response. When you thank your mind, your sense organs, they also feel pleased that they should be appreciated rather than just taken for granted. There is no karma, no action that one can do to achieve yourself, to gain yourself. Simply because you are already here. There is nothing you can do to make you here when you are already here. Karma involves accomplishing something that's not yet accomplished, making something that's not yet made, cleaning something that's soiled, changing it from something soiled to something clean. It involves a change. Reaching something, going somewhere to another location. All of these things can be achieved by karma. You can do something to make, to reach, to purify. But something that's already accomplished . What can you do to accomplish it? If something is already accomplished, but you don't know that it is accomplished, what would be the solution to that problem? The distance between the accomplished and my search for the accomplished is a distance of ignorance. That ignorance isn't removed by karma. The ignorance is removed by knowledge. The distance between myself and the seeking of myself is a distance of ignorance. for solution has nothing to do with karma. It has to do with knowledge. As I sit here, I can ask, who am I? I either know who I am, or I know that I don't know who I am, or I know that I kind of know, I'm beginning to know who I am, or I don't know that I don't know who I am. Most people don't know that they don't know. Because the question doesn't arise. I am walking to the store. I am reading a book. I am the sister of my sister, the mother of my child. I'm a teacher or a student. The question need not arise. I always define myself by the relative situation. I am young, I am old, I am healthy, I am sick, I am agitated, I am happy. I don't know that I don't know, because the word I is continually being defined. So such an I. That is continually defined by my actions or my thoughts or my stage in life or my accomplishments. That I performs karma. To achieve, to accomplish, to reach, to purify. But should someone ask, who is the I that is doing all of these activities? Who is the I that is present? That has nothing to do with accomplishing or reaching or purifying or making. That's a wanting to know. Who it is, who I am, that is sitting here, this being. And no amount of activity can remove that ignorance. Activity doesn't remove ignorance. Not knowing who I am, I can do, I can achieve, I can reach, I can purify, I can make. It won't touch my ignorance. Only knowledge removes that ignorance. Self-knowledge removes self-ignorance. It's a great punya to know that I don't know who I am. Because then I can seek the answer. We're on section 2, verse 5. It's first to the Shanti Mantra, Om Bhatram. So if you could repeat it for me. Om Bhatram Karne Vishrinuyama Devaha. Om Bhadran Karne Vishrinuyama Devaha Bhadram Pashe Makshabhiryajatraha Bhadram Pashe Makshabhiryajatraha Stirai Rangai Istushtuvagum Sastanubihi Stirai Rangai Istushtuvagum Sastanubihi Vyashema devahitam yadayuhu Vyashema devahitam yadayuhu Swastina indro vrittashravaha Swastina indro vrittashravaha Swastina pusha vishwavedaha Swastina pusha vishwavedaha Swastina starksho arishtanemihi Swastina Staraksho Arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Okay, verse 5, so repeat after me. Eteshu yascharate brajamaneshu Eteshu yascharate brajamaneshu Yatha kalam chahutayo ahyadadayan Yatha kalam chayutayo ahyadadayan Tam nayante ta suryasya rashmayo Tam nayante ta suryasya rashmayo Actually it's rashmayaha. Tam nayan, let me do that again so we can break the sandhi. Tam nayante ta suryasya rashmayaha. Tam nayante ta suryasya rashmayaha. Yatra devanam patireko divasaha. Yatra devanam patireko divasaha. Sandhi. Eteshu yaha. Charate Brajamaneshu Yatha Kalam. It's actually Yatha Kalam, but it goes together as one compound, Yatha Kalam. Cha Ahutayaha Hi Adadayan Tam Nayanti Etaha Suryasya Rashmayaha Yatra Devanam Patihi Ekaha Adivasaha. So if you remember in the preceding verse, all of the different names for the flames were told. Where Kali is kind of a blue flame, you know, kind of a dark, it's a bluish flame. Karali is a very explosive type of flame. So it went through giving seven different names for the different types of flames. So very sophisticated. In Swamiji's Bhasha on this, he talks about, just like the Eskimos have so many names for snow, right? In India, we have so many different names for the different flames because the ritual is so integral to kind of the Vedic culture. And in the ritual always, in the Vedic ritual, the offerings are always made to Agni, to the fire. They're always made into one side of the fire, another side of the fire, or into the middle of the fire, and the flames have to be of a certain stature. And there are many types of flames. The flames should be, in a sense, the flames, when a ritual is being done, the flames have to be brilliant and bright and crackling. It has to be really full of tejas and full of energy, trembling, you know, so these flames should be shooting up. And when the flames are really active, then you can differentiate all of these different types of flames. If the flames aren't full and active, and bright and full of energy. When the ghee or the offering, sometimes they'll offer whole bananas or coconuts or ghee or milk, the flame has to be able to swallow those up. Because otherwise, say you offer like all kinds of flowers and ghee and different things, and you offer them into the fire, and it just puts the fire out. That's an unsuccessful situation. So the fire has to be alive and vibrant. And so here, in the verse 4, these fire, the septa jihwaha, the seven, the fires, these different flames, all of the flames are called the seven different tongues. Each flame is a tongue because it's receiving the offering. Right? So these seven flames, these seven types of tongues are receiving the offering. So they're the seven tongues because they're eating it. So that's eating the offerings. So that being so, he says, now we're continuing on. So the yajamana is the one who's performing the ritual, who's making these offerings and doing the appropriate chants and offerings according to viddhi, as has been taught at the proper time, and all of this ritual is being performed. So it says here, eteshu yaha charate brajamaneshu yaha. He who charate, he who performs, he who's performing this ritual, right? Yeteshu, into these seven flames, into these flames, seven in number, brajamaneshu, which are all brilliant. They're all shining with brilliance and energy. That's brajamaneshu, eteshu. So the flames are roaring with energy. So eteshu yaha charate brajamaneshu. So the one who is making the offerings into these well-formed flames, yatha kalam, at the right time. In other words, for instance, the Agnihotra, these different rituals have to be done at a specific time. They can be done in the morning. They're supposed to be done in the morning. They're supposed to be done in the evening. They're supposed to be done on particular days, astrological days. So there's an appropriate time for each given karma to be performed. So the one who performs these karmas into these flames that are healthy, right, yatha kalam, at the ordained time, at the proper time, which is also part of the ritual, right? The time that you actually perform the karma is also part of the viddhi, part of the requirement for performing the ritual. So that's what yatha kalam means. So the ones who does the ritual properly, he who does this ritual properly at the proper time, ahutiyaha hi adadayan. The offerings, the ahutis, the offerings themselves, tam from the third line, tam adadayan, carrying him. Adadayan is a present participle. So the ritual, the offerings that have been offered. Now these offerings, they carry him. They hold him, okay, the yajamana, carrying him, tam nayanti, they lead him. So etaha atiha, ahutiha. These, etaha means these offerings, holding him, tam nayanti, they lead him. These offerings which suryasya rashmiyaha, these offerings which now have become the rays of the sun. Okay? The offerings become the rays of the sun. Actually, as Swamiji does his commentary on this, how he explains this also, it's just a subtlety here. The offerings and the ritual, when it's properly done, it produces punya. And so the offerings themselves are the punya. They become the punya, right? Punya is the subtle effects of your good deeds. So these rituals produce punya, okay? And so these offerings themselves are converted into punya, which then, holding the yajamana, take him to, as we'll see, they take him to the Brahmaloka. These offerings, becoming the rays of the sun, take him to, we'll see, they take him to Yetra, where Devanam Patihi Ekaha Adivasaha. They lead him, this is after death, I'll get into that in 2 minutes. They lead him to where Devanam Patihi, the Lord of the Devas, the single, the one Lord of the Devas, was Indra, the Lord of the Devas, who is the Adivasaha, the one who has overlordship of all of the Devas. They take this Yajamana, the one who has performed these rituals, to that heavenly abode, where the Lord of all of the Devas lives. So they're taking him to Swargaloka, but we'll see that later. The idea is this. The karmis, the ones who are still within the world of samsara, who take themselves to be a karta, a doer. I am a doer, right? This is who I am. I'm a jiva. And I also have shraddha in the Vedas. And I know that by doing these rituals that are enjoined upon me, by doing these rituals properly, I will, upon this death, be taken to Swargaloka, or to a higher loka, where I can enjoy the fruits, the pulla, of that loka, where there's a great degree of sukha, a great degree of enjoyment and happiness and pleasure. And so a karmi, someone who's still has that kartritvam, there's no sense, they're the ones who don't know that they don't know. That'll come later. They don't know that they don't know. For them, the kartritvam, when I experience myself as a doer, as an enjoyer, as this physical body, but I have that shraddha, that the soul transmigrates, that's part of the culture, so I know that my soul will transmigrate, and that by doing proper karmas and doing these rituals that are enjoined upon me, and by doing them properly, then, upon death, I will be taken to Swargaloka. And so, why do they know that? Because here it is. Here it is in the Shastra itself. The Shastra teaches those who are held in the Vedic tradition that this is so. And so here's a verse itself, which is Upanishad, which is the Shruti, and this will be in great detail, detailed in the first part of the Vedas. The Shruti itself says this, that the one who performs karmas into these bright, brilliant flames, yatha kalam, as they should, as at the proper time, etc., right? Then those offerings which have become the rays of the sun, carrying that one who has performed the karma, leads him, nayantam nayanti, leads him, okay? He leads him to where? To where the Lord of the Devas, the single, the one Lord of the Devas, means Indra, who has Adivasaha, who is dwelling there, having overlordship of all of the beings there. These offerings, which have become the rays of the sun, will take him to this place, right? To this heavenly world that is ruled by Indra. So now this is another interesting thing to understand. There's a loka, which we'll say Swargaloka, and this would be in this case, it's a Swargaloka, which the Lord, in the form of one of the Lords of the Devatas, Indra, has overlordship of this loka. So you will be one of the minions in that loka. You're not Indra, right? So you will be one of the beings that is living in that loka. But in that loka, loka means world. But in that heavenly world where you will be living, there is a much, 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 much higher degree of sukha, of ananda, of the experience of ananda. Whereas in this loka, the human world, it's 50-50, right? 50% punya, 50% papa, right? And so there are hard times in this loka for every living creature, for every jiva. You know, you may have higher ranking. In other words, you may have a life that seemingly has much more opportunity than another, more money, nicer home, greater health, all of these types of things. We see incredible inequality in the world, right? However, in your highly blessed, you know, privileged existence, you will still have 50% punya, 50% papa. Just because you have a privileged existence in terms of the things that you own or your physical health, etc., that doesn't mean that you will enjoy more sukha. So there will be plenty of opportunities in your privileged existence to be unhappy. It's the same if you see people who have much less privilege, much more terrible poverty, you know, a lot of much more generalized suffering. So there's inequality there. Okay? So you can say they have less punya that caused them to take a birth that had so much suffering, you know. But within their life, they have pleasurable experiences, right? And they have negative experiences. So no matter what the level of your station of life in this loka is, you're still going to be having the experiences of pleasure and pain. The life will divide out like that. And sometimes the example will be as, you know, whether you're a king or a queen or as a beggar, when you're asleep, you're in the same condition. Now, look at this. Whether you're a king or queen or a beggar or a crippled person, when you're happy, you're happy. When you're enjoying the anand of yourself, because your mind is quiet, let's put it that way, you're going to be in the most terrible situation, you know, one that you would not choose. It's nicer to be healthy, and it's nicer to have money, and it's nicer to be in a safe place. Nobody's going to contest that. But the fact is, also, that being true, when you're happy, you're happy. And when you're sad, you're sad. Whether you're rich or you're poor or you're healthy or you're sick. When you're happy, you're happy. When you're sad, you're sad. And so no matter what the walk of life you have because of your karmas, you are going to have pleasure and pain in this loka. Why, knowing this, experiencing this, being taught this in the Shastra, but also having first-hand knowledge of it, a karmi, someone who is devoted to the first portion of the Vedas, which teaches all of these rituals and their results, will work to gain the punya, do what is required to gain the punya, to take them to a loka where they can be freed from pain, at least for the time being. Where your body is not subject to aging, where you're not subject to hunger and thirst, right? Where the desires that you have are fulfilled. You know, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about not having a good body. You have a wonderful body. Wonderful, beautiful body, just as you would want it to be. The food that you eat doesn't make you fat. You can enjoy the food. You can enjoy food and drink without it hurting your body. The desires that you have, you can fulfill. And so these type of strains and stresses are not there. That's the Swargaloka. And so one who's committed to the first part of the Vedas, who has these ragas, let me gain this so that I can be happy. Let me gain in this world itself, let me gain this, let me gain this, let me gain this so I can be happy. And then let me do these karmas and these karmas and these karmas and these rituals so that I will be taken to that abode where Indra is, where I can really be happy. Without having to suffer the dukkha, the sorrow that seems to balance out the happiness in this loka. And so there's a commitment there too. And so this text, these first, is trying to present, this first section that we're dealing with now in this section two, is showing exactly how far you can go in samsara. Within the Vedic culture, within the Vedic tradition, how far you can go. And so here, what's being said is, now, at this stage, if you were to just do the rituals that are enjoined upon you, the Agnihotra and other rituals, just the rituals, no upasana, no meditation, just the rituals. This is how far you can go. Okay? And so this is just the start of it. So here, you've performed these rituals properly, then the offerings, which are really the punya in the form of the rays of the sun, they will lead you to the abode of Indra, to this heavenly world. So then, let's see what happens. Next verse. Ehye hi ti tamahutiya suvarachasaha. Ehye hi ti tamahutiya suvarachasaha. Suryasya rashmibhir yajamanam vahanti. Suryasya rashmibhir yajamanam vahanti. Priyam vacham abhivarantyor chayantyaha. Priyavacham abhivarantyor chayantyaha. Eshavah punya sukrito brahmalokaha. Eshavah punya sukrito brahmalokaha. It says, Sandhi. Ehi, ehi, iti. Tam ahutayaha. Suvarchasaha. Suryasya rashmibhi yajamanam vahanti. Priyam vacham abhivarantyaha archayantyaha. Eshaha vaha punyaha sukritaha brahmalokaha. Okay. He says, ehi, ehi, iti. Ehi, ehi. Come, come. Welcome, welcome. Ehi, ehi, iti. Tam ahutiyaha suvarachasaha. These brilliant, these luminous offerings, punya, the punya, now they've become as though embodied angels like that. The ahutis, the offerings themselves, they have become numinous, bright, suvarachasaha. And these offerings, suryasya rashmibhi yajamanam vahanti, they lead the yajamana, the one who's doing the rituals, they lead him by the rays of the sun. Okay? They lead him by the rays of the sun, saying, ehi, ehi, come, come, come. Priyam vacham abhivarantyaha, saying these pleasing words, priyam vacham abhivarantyaha, present participle, abhivarantyaha, saying these pleasing words, archayantyaha, and worshipping him, praising him and worshipping him, you know, saying these pleasing words, come, come, come. And then as they arrive, they say, eshavaha punyaha, sukritaha brahmalokaha. This is your punya. They've arrived at heaven. Eshavaha punyaha. This is your punyaha. This is because of your merit. Sukritaha, which is the result of your good deeds, that which has been well done. This is the punya, that which has been well done. It is the brahmaloka. This is your brahmaloka, right? Which is the result, sukritaha, of your good karmas. Right? It is punya. The result of your good karmas is punya. And what is the punya for you? This is for you, this brahmaloka. This brahmaloka, actually, this is the brahmaloka for you. What that means here is this is the highest abode that these karmas that you have done, these rituals that you have done, you have reached the highest abode that these rituals can give you. There's another abode which is actually called Brahmaloka. This is Brahmaloka for you. Those of you who have done the karmas properly, you will get this heavenly abode that we're calling Brahmaloka. It's not the highest Brahmaloka, it's actually Swargaloka. It's Brahmaloka for you who have done these karmas. To get the Swargaloka, you have to do all kinds of upasanas plus the karmas. Right? But for you, this is your Brahmaloka. This is as high as you can go. But in this Brahmaloka, which is Swargaloka, what it means is at Swargaloka, as I was just explaining, this particular abode, as you desire it, so it shall be. Healthy body, beautiful body, not old, you don't get old. You don't die. Your karma runs out and then you come back. Right? Your karma runs out, but you don't experience death. You don't experience old age. You, like in a dream, if you were to go in a dream, you were to go into a heavenly world, right? And everything was just wonderful. You know, everything going just as you would want it to be. And your body would stay as is, very healthy, very vibrant. Sense organs wonderful. Beautiful body as would be pleasing to you. If it wasn't pleasing to you, that wouldn't be Svargaloka. If you think, oh, I don't want to look like this, then you won't. That is, well, what would you like to look like? I want to look okay, that's fine. So with a healthy, beautiful body, experiencing and satisfying your desires, right? That will be the case until that karma comes to an end. And then when the karma breaks, then that jiva is catapulted then into taking another birth down here, as we'll see. But while you are there, you don't experience old age and death and ill health. And you don't experience unfulfilled desires. So here, what we call the offerings now that have become devatas in a sense, you know, like angels who are ushers. That's what Swamiji calls them. The ahutis, the offerings, have become like angelic ushers who are taking you. Now you've died, right? You've dropped the body. So these angelic ushers now are accompanying you up to this swarga, to this heavenly world, which is as high as you can go, saying, come, come, we're so happy. Come, come. You're so wonderful. Look at what you've done. You are worthy. You're so praiseworthy. You know, with all kinds of sweet words, and then taking them into Svargaloka, they say, look, this is your punya. This is the Brahmaloka for you. Look at what you have gained through all of your good deeds. And they welcome them into this heavenly abode. All is well. Okay.
So now, there are a lot of people up there?
Yeah. I'm sure there are. So now, you notice, up to this point, you're just really describing the rituals and then the wonderful fruits of those rituals for the karmi, the one who's performing these, thinking, you know, let me perform these rituals so that I can get a better next birth and so that I can go to heaven. This is what these people believe to be the highest end that they can achieve. So now, remember that in section one, in the very beginning, we are looking at what is aparavidya, right, and paravidya. Here, now in detail, is being described aparavidya, the lower vidya, that lower knowledge, the karmakanda, really, and what it can give. And so now in detail, he's telling, these are the rituals, all these rituals that are to be done, and these are the fruits. Get that? Now, he has a little something else to say about it. So verse 7. Plavahyete adhrita yajnyarupaha. Plavahyete adhrita yajnyarupaha. Ashtadashoktam avaram yeshu karma. Ashtadashoktam avaram yeshu karma. Etat shrayo ye binandanti mudaha. Etat shrayo ye binandanti mudaha. Jaram lityum te punar eva piyanti. Jaram lityum te punar eva piyanti. Now he says, these rituals, he says, plavaha, hi etaha. Indeed, these are plavaha. They are like rafts, which are adrida, unstable, unsteady, not firm. These are like unstable rafts. What are yajnarupaha? all of these elements, all that is involved, all of these forms of yajna. Yajna means ritual. So all of the elements, all of the constituent parts of these rituals that are being done, they are like rafts, which are weak, which are adridaha. They're not firm. They're not firmly held together. He says, tava hiete adrida yajna rupaha. He says, ashtadashoktam avram yeshi karma. He says, they're like rafts on which this avram karma, says these karma means ritual, this avram karma, it's a lower ritual, it's weak. It's a lower ritual, which is told to be 18. Ashtadasha, or ashtadasha, I mean ashtadasha means 18, which is said to be 18 of 18 parts by the Shruti. The 18 parts, say we are doing, what they're showing here is an example of the greatest ritual, one of the greatest rituals you can do without upasana. It has 18 segments to it, 18 parts. Four parts from each one of the Vedas. There'll be four priests from the Rig Veda, four priests from the Sama Veda, four priests from the Yajur Veda, four priests from the Atharva Veda. That makes 16 priests, plus the Yajamana, who would be the man, the Yajamana, who's doing, and his wife, the Patni. That makes for 18. Okay? All of these are the 18 components of this major ritual that is being done that will get you as much punya as you can possibly get without doing upasana. There's another level of ritual that involves doing upasanas, which are meditations, that you have to do these very fancy, elaborate rituals, plus all of these meditations also. That will get you to Brahmaloka. But in this section, you're not getting to Brahmaloka. You're getting to Swargaloka. So these are avara karmas. They're the lower karmas. These lower karmas will take you to Swargaloka, which I've just been describing to you. And the lower karmas, they're put together by these 18 components who are very involved in performing the karma. Okay? So these are 18 kartas, 18 doers, right? 18 people that are involved in performing this ritual for you. Okay? And so look at it like this. Here's this ritual being done by 18 karmas. They're all doing the ritual. Very fancy. It's very, very involved. But they are performing an action which is going to give a result. Each one of them, all together, they're performing actions which are going to give a result. But the problem is that no action, no matter how many people are involved in it, how complex it is, no action can give an infinite result. Every action, by its nature, gives a limited result, no matter how fancy the action is. Right? Limited gives limited. And so here it says, these fancy, fancy yajnas, these fancy rituals, which have all 18 components, means as many priests as you could possibly have involved in it are now involved. And so it's a sophisticated, complex karma. It's still an avaram karma. There's no upasana involved. And we'll see why that makes a difference. But for now, no upasana involved. So these karmas, they are like rafts which are unsteady, that are weak, adrida, not firm. Okay? Plavaha means it can mean a raft or a small boat, a boat, something like that. It can also, the idea for these rafts, as Shankara says in his Bhasha, plavaha vinashinaha. These raft-like things, what are they saying? They're anitya. They're subject to destruction. They will come apart. That's the idea. Okay. So now he says, okay, these rafts, these components of the yajna are giving you something that are avaram, okay, lower karma. So he says, then he says, etat shreya ye abhinandanti mudaha. The deluded people, those who are deluded, ye mudaha, these deluded people Abhinandanti. They rejoice. These deluded people, they're rejoicing. Etat Shreyas, thinking, this is Shreyas. Means this that we're doing, this complex ritual here that we're doing, this is the Shreyas. This is the means for liberation. This is, Shreyas means that which is the highest good. So here we mean Shreyas, the highest good. This is the means for that Shreyas. This is the Shreyas. This is what we're doing. This complex karma that we're doing, they're rejoicing, saying, this will be the means for taking us to this highest goal. This is our Shreyas. This is what they think. As I said, even in the meditation, I may think, if I take myself to be the karta, the doer, I don't know that I don't know. If I take myself, this is the truth, I am this, then what can I achieve? Well, the highest thing I can achieve, the moksha for me, is going to be a heavenly world where all of my desires are fulfilled. Right? But the problem is this. He says, they think this is Shreyas, but jaramrityum te punar evapiyanti. They go again and again to old age and death. Why? Not while they're there, but they will be reborn. Their karma will be run out, and then poof, like the dream, they take another birth back here, and what do they experience? Old age and death. In India, heaven, hell, all of these heaven, hell worlds are temporary. There is no idea of some world that going to heaven has an infinite reward. You go to heaven as an infinite reward. That makes no sense. If you're doing finite karmas, finite actions, how can these finite actions produce an infinite or timeless result? We never experience that anywhere. You do an action, it produces a result. The action is finite, the result is finite. And so here, when you are, whether you're doing karmas or whatever actions you're doing, these actions that you're doing will produce a result. They may produce a heavenly result. But that heavenly result will last for a certain amount of time, and then you will be catapulted out of it, only to take another birth here, which is, again, to experience jara, old age, mrityu, death. So the cycle of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death will go on continuing. So you'll get a few moments of pleasure, and then you'll be back down here. A period of time of heaven, and then you'll be back down here, and that will continue and continue. From our point of view, it's the drowning man syndrome. Now, whether it goes fast or slow, this is the drowning man syndrome. You're in the middle of the ocean, and there's an undertow. Okay? And the undertow will push you up and pull you down. Right? That's just what it does. It pushes you up, and when you're up, you get some air. And you feel so happy and grateful and relieved that you're now able to breathe, you know, and enjoy that moment of life, only to be pulled down again, and then pushed back up, and pulled down, and pushed back up, and pulled down. Now, in this case, you're pushed up, and you get to stay up for a while, only to be pulled down again, right? But from your standpoint, as a jiva, living in this world, when you think of going to Swargaloka, going to heaven and getting to stay there for a while because of your karma, that's like getting to go on a really, really great long vacation. You know, I mean, a wonderful vacation. Like for me, as a professor, I'm getting a sabbatical. I get a sabbatical in the fall. That sabbatical is going to last from fall, from September until January. And I can even extend it, actually, It lasts from June, the summer, right? The summer until the end of January. I'm really looking forward to that. Okay? That's going to be my little Swargaloka. Now, I've had these sabbaticals. This will be my third one. Okay? And I know that as soon as I start it, the clock is ticking. The clock starts ticking. As soon as that sabbatical starts, here's the end. And at first you'll think, oh, well, there's a long time left. But you know that you've started it. So what happens? Right? And then it's over. That's the reality. And that's the Swarga reality also. You are working for a timeout. You are working for a great, big, long, wonderful vacation. And what better does the universe have to offer? You know? And so that's the situation. Because you don't know anymore. That's as much as you know. Right? That's as much as the karmi knows. For the karmi, the one who is not, the samsari, who has not recognized the problem, right, who has not become a mumukshu, for that person, this kartritvam, the doership, the limited nature of the individual, is a given. It's a, I don't know that I don't know. The who am I question, really, the who am I really? Is there something that survives death? Is there anybody besides this person who is performing the rituals, who has a family, you know, who is doing this or doing that, is healthy or ill? Is there anybody besides that? No. If the question does not arise. And as in the meditation, the question need not arise. The question need not arise. Because relatively, who you are is always answered. Like right now, I am the teacher, you are the student, the question is answered. Right now, you are, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 or 60. Somebody was asked, how old are you? Oh, the question is answered, who you are. You're a man or a woman. You're a sister or a mother or a doctor or a lawyer. You are what you are. So wherever you just walk, you walk into a grocery store, you're shopping. You're a shopper. Wherever you are, you have a relative identity based upon what you're doing and who you are with, right? And how you are feeling. Because it's even internally. I am agitated. I am happy. I am thin, I am fat, I am tall, I am tired, I am relatively answered. In terms of relationally, answered. You just walk around and see if the I is not held by the situation, right? And so why should the question arise? That's tremendous punya. It's considered tremendous grace. That question should arise. That question, for that question to arise, that's the birth of the mumukshu, the one who has that question. For most people, it doesn't arise, you know. When I asked my mother, she asked me what I was doing in India, right, and I thought I'd tell her a few things and about what I was really doing there. And a few sentences in, she said, oh, I don't have those kind of problems. She feels comfortable, and she said something to this, I don't remember the exact words, I feel comfortable with who I am. I'm comfortable with myself, I feel comfortable with who I am. There was no question whatsoever. No mamukshutvam, no question. She was fine, and that was fine, you know. Her eye was completely taken care of by the situation, and that is 99.9999999%. of the population. That mumukshutvam is rare. That means you're on your way out. This universe is not meant for the mumukshu. This universe, right, is meant for the karmi. Right, that's who it serves. Is the karmi, the one who is contained within the universe and looks around at the sense organs, you have objects that you see, you have objects that you hear, you have things that you do. This upadhi is made for the karmi, it's made for the jiva. It's just that. It also, because it's not just the karmakanda, the Upanishads are there, the Vedanta is there. In the whole Vedas, this Vedanta is there for that rare individual who says, wait a minute, who am I? What is this really about? What is going on here? But for 99.99%, it's the individual, the person is run by, is ruled by, as we'll see if these verses unfold, is ruled by raga. Raga means, I want this so that I can be happy. Raga is passion, desire. I want this so I can be happy. I want this so I can be happy. I want this. I want this. I want the sweater galoka. I want to do punya, as much punya as I can do. Accrue as much punya as I can do so that I can have better, you know, I can have better experiences in these heavenly worlds. And then I can take a better birth. And a better birth and a better birth. But so that I can own more, so that I can have more. So that I can be happier, so that I can have more wealth. So I can be more intelligent, so I can have more power, so I can be a better and better and better and bigger samsari. No, that's what it is. Okay, so he's saying now these karmas that people strive to perform properly so that they can gain the results of these karmas. It is true, they can gain the results of the karmas, but these karmas are like weak, unstable rafts that break apart. Because when they break apart, that which they were holding comes to an end. So you're catapulted out of that swargaloka, right? Because the karmas are bound by time. No karma, no ritual produces an infinite result, a timeless result. And so therefore you will find yourself catapulted back into this world of jara marana, birth and death. Right? Again, so it says, it doesn't just say once, it says jara mrityum, birth and death, te yan inti, they go to birth and death, punara eva api, again and again. Indeed, punara eva, right? Definitely, again and again and again, they come back, going through the cycle of birth, death, birth, death. Then in the next verse we'll do next week, he says, avidyayam antare vartamanaha. These people living in the middle of avidya, in the middle of ignorance, you know, going around thinking that they know something, swayam considering themselves to be wise, to have knowledge. These people suffer. So you can see, after having built up karma and the highest realms that you can achieve, now the Upanishad is taking it apart and showing what the flaw in that is. And really the flaw, and it'll do this for a while now, a few more verses, the flaw is this, that no karma, no action can give you anything lasting. And so therefore, no matter how great the sukha, the ananda, the bliss you are able to generate through your actions or through your rituals, through the karmas that are held in the first part of the Vedas, no matter how great they are, the result is limited. And because the result is limited, you will come back into sorrow, into birth and death. And so it's just simply a timeout. There's more than that. There's more than that that's available for you. And that more than that has to be discovered. The people who teach this, those people who believe in this, they are living in a world of ignorance, thinking that they know. Within their ignorance, they think that they know what is to be known. But what they think is to be known, is not the whole story. That's the idea. So let's stop there and just take a moment. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Yeah, I know. It's the, this Upanishad is really, it has a very definite structure. Even in the first section, it goes all the way through the avara karma, telling what that is, you know, and then the paravidya. I mean, avara vidya, and then the paravidya. And now it goes through this avara karma all the way through, and then it deconstructs it, and then it goes to paravidya, which starts in verse 12 of this section. In verse 12. But now these next few verses, the few verses here, are really kind of deconstructing it and showing what the problem is. Because what the Upanishad is trying to do is create in you the mumukshutvam. Create in you the recognition of the problem, you know, the limitations, to give you that vairagya. Vairagya means that dispassion where you recognize, oh, that's right. This is not capable of giving me what I truly seek. So it wants, within the Vedic context, now of course this is Vedic context, but we can translate, you know, to our context. It creates what you want as a human, what you're seeking as a human being, then it unfolds the limitations to that, you know, and then it gives you the solution. So that's the modus operandi.
Well, one thing I get a little, I guess, hung up on is this notion of there being two different states of, you know, like this is a finite, like this heaven, like there's this higher and lower being described. And,
well, there's seven levels up of different what we call lokas or planes of existence, that each level, each succeeding level gives you more experience of sukha.
But what is the apara?
Apara?
Yeah.
Apara vidya, or sometimes called avara, or so apara or avara vidya, has to do with all the knowledge that exists within samsara. So for instance, like the first part of the Vedas, you know, gives all of these type of rituals. It also teaches you dharma and all of the, so much relative knowledge, you know, empirical knowledge, understanding that exists within duality. Even the being able to learn by heart, to memorize the Upanishads, along with the whole Vedas, that's all avaravidya or aparavidya, right? Aparavidya is aham brahmasmi. Not the book learning, where you learn how to chant say you learn how to chant the Upanishads, and in the Upanishads you're chanting aham brahmasmi. Okay? You chant it. You have no idea what it means. So, paravidya is the cognition, the removal of the ignorance, to where you recognize your being as param brahman. You recognize the reality of the self-experience as being brahman. That's paravidya.
So there's two things, though. Is the message of tat tvamasi present throughout the Vedas, or just in the last?
It's present throughout, but it's not the tat paraya. Tat paraya means what is it that the first portion of the Vedas are trying to teach, and who are they addressing? So the first part of the Vedas are not addressing, they're not about the reality of the individual or the reality of the creation. They're not about that. They're about, here you find yourself in this creation and you want to be happy. What are the guidelines? What are the spheres of existence in this creation? Heaven worlds and hell worlds. And how do I get to them? How do I avoid papa? How do I avoid pain? And how do I gain punya and gain pleasure? What are the guidelines? What are the rules? So assuming ignorance, the ignorance of the individual, which is innate and beginningless, it's not like you have prior, sometimes had knowledge. The individual is born into a situation of ajnana and beginningless ignorance. And so from that space, you look out, and this is the, you are the, here you are, and here's the universe. Just like, say, in the dream. You have a dream. You're identified with a character in the dream. You have that dream character has beginningless ignorance of what is actually happening. That dream character looks around in the dream, and I'm a limited individual experiencing this universe, talking to you and talking to you and wanting to get this and that. Now, the first part of the Vedas is geared toward this individual who takes himself or herself to be the limited jiva, the limited individual, who is a doer and a seer and a knower and a hearer, who is participating in the creation. So the first part of the Vedas tells what is the structure within this creation, and how do I manage? Swamiji has called it like a guidebook to the universe. How do I manage? What will give me, what attitudes, what behavior, what rituals, etc., will give me the most shanti, the most peace, the most pleasure, the most happiness? That's the first part of the Vedas. And the adhikari, the qualified student for this first part of the Vedas, is the one who doesn't know that they don't know, who takes themselves to be, I am this karta, I am this doer. That's not a question. So as this person, I want this and that. So that's the first part. The second part, the adhikari, the qualified student, is different. That the adhikari for the second part says, what is this universe? Who am I? Who is Ishwara? Is there anything about myself that survives birth and death? What is it? You know, is there anything lasting? So the adhikari for the Vedanta, the last part of the Vedas, wants to know who I am. The other one wants to achieve, to get stay away from papa and dukkha and go toward sukpunya and sukha.
So there's an acknowledgement of the inherent duality of creation in this.
Yes, in the first part of the Vedas, it says nothing about the level of reality of the creation. It's only talking about what's going on within it. Mm-hmm. The second part, the whole thing is about what is this creation, and what is the reality of it? So once you want to know the reality, then you hop over to the to the Vedanta. Yeah, that and there's so many. All of the Upanishads will talk about this. You know, the student goes to the teacher, asking a question that takes them from side A to side B. Right, it takes them over that. You know, remember when we did the Katha Upanishad, Nachiketas?
Right? I was thinking about that.
Yeah, that if you were to go back and read the first chapter, that dialogue between Nachiketas and Yama, Nachiketas proves himself to be somebody who wants this knowledge. Yama tests him. Oh, wouldn't you like to go to Swargaloka, and I'll give you all of these beautiful damsels and all of these, you know, instruments and chariots and all you can imagine. He just lists them all. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't you love that? Also, you can, you know, have overlordship in on this earth itself. You can, you know, have overlordship. You can, you know, be the king of the whole thing and have all the wealth and riches. And you can be really healthy also. You won't get sick and you'll live forever. You'll live for a really long time. He goes on and on, offering all of these things. And Nachiketas keeps refusing, saying, no, these are all as nice as they are. They still burn your senses out, and you still eventually wither and die. This isn't what I want. But Yama, Lord Yama, presses him on and on and on and on, the whole chapter. And then finally, Lord Yama says, I'm pleased. I'm pleased. and teaches him. And he teaches him the rest of the Kathopanishad. You know? And it's every Upanishad is different in the little, in the story, in the setup. Here, Chanaka is a Mahashala, means he's a householder. And someone, a Mahashala means he's a householder, he's a wealthy man, he's familiar with all of the rituals, has done all of the rituals, has been, is learned, has done all, that's what Mahashala means. He knows how to do all the rituals, has done all of the rituals, has been brought up in, as a Vedagnya, somebody who knows the Vedas, you know, wealthy, done all the what they call Ishtapurta, all of the all kinds of charities and karmas to, you know, to gain punya from doing that, all different types of humanitarian charities. Having done all of that and be sitting there as a great wealthy Mahashala who has done all of the rituals and can afford to have done all of the rituals also to get to the highest heavens, you know, he goes to Angirasa and says, could you teach me, knowing that one thing which all other things are known? So having all of this, you know, it's not enough. He already has it all. He has everything. And it's not enough. So then he goes to the guru, the teacher. And that's why then the teacher, Girasa, says to him, so you have to remember who the teacher is talking to. He's talking to this man who knows all of these rituals, has done all the rituals, has had the wealth to do all the rituals, and is sitting there with all of that. He answers it, not right away, answering the question. He says, you know, there are two knowledges, the avaravidya and the aparavidya, because Shaunaka has the avaravidya, he has that. He's done all of that. And so when Angirasa says, this is the avaravidya, then he lists off all the four Vedas and all of the, you know, all of the angas, all of the different studies that you do in support of the Vedas. He lists all of that. These are all of the things that Shaunaka has. He knows all of that. But he says, this is the avaravidya. This is the lower vidya. There's also paravidya. And it's paravidya that you need now. And then he unfolds that, knowing which all things are known. He does it in brief. And then we move into the section, this next section now, where he's showing Shaunaka the limitations of everything that he's been involved in, which are all of these karmas. Shaunaka knows exactly what he's talking about, because he's done all of these. This has been his life. He's done all of these karmas. He knows them backwards and forwards. He knows everything that he's saying about them. And all of the rewards and everything. So he's probably nodding, yes, 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 yes. But then Angirasa goes on and says, but all of these lead to, all of these are weak rafts. And he hasn't stopped yet. There's still a couple of more verses where he takes it to the highest karma, which has upasana. And shows the limitation of that too. So what he's doing is talking to Shaunaka and showing that everything, this is what you've done. And this is how far you can go. And this is the limitation of that. And this is what you don't know. This is all existing within avidya. Yeah. That's a setup. He's setting them up. Nice to, I haven't done much of that, but hopefully in your own mind you're doing it as we go along, to translate into our present day situation, you know, in terms of what we seek in order to become happy and whole and complete. You know, the kartritvam, that doership, it's all based upon doership and accomplishment. Let me get this and let me get that and let me change this and change that. And what is the highest that I can, In my worldview, for each one of you to think, for me in my world, what is the highest achievement that can be gained by a human being that I may be able to achieve? You know? And that's what's being negated. Yeah. And if I were to just even do this or this or this, up at a notch, I could then maybe get this. And it'll still be finite. And you'll still be bound by birth and death. It still just involves so much it involves duality. Okay?
Yeah, it's a good
plan. Good.